State Senator Jason Barrickman says he's having a tough time getting answers from the Illinois Department of Corrections about inmate transfers out of Pontiac Prison.
He accused me and my line of questions as being...
More just ahead on WGLT's Sound Ideas. Good afternoon, I'm John Norton. Also on today's show, 1,500 people in McLean County end up in the hospital ERs for dental care every year.
The need was so great here that, we pursued this as a really important part of our mission.
You'll hear about a new dental clinic coming to Bloomington, plus a Bloomington woman who has struggled with substance abuse wants to help others who are fighting the same battles.
They don't have to feel so alone.
Heartland Community College offering a new peer recovery support program. Those stories and a Bloomington Normal News update are just ahead. This is WGLT's news magazine, Sound Ideas, on 89.1 FM and WGLT.org.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology. BNA's educational video series, Hear My Story, continues with local patient Trevor Chapman.
Once somebody puts hearing aids in for the first time and they turn on and you realize all of the sounds around you, it kind of sells itself as an important part of your life.
Trevor's full story can be found at bnaudiology.com.
With stories and conversations around Bloomington Normal and McLean County, this is WGLT's news magazine, Sound Ideas. I'm John Norton. First, a reminder to join us tomorrow for a special edition of Sound Ideas, an hour-long broadcast of the debate between the two candidates running in the new Illinois 91st House District, Democrat Sharon Chung and Republican Scott Preston. The debate is tonight at 6 at Illinois State University's Bone Student Center. It's in the Prairie Room. The event will be streamed live on Facebook. Now to a state legislator who is unopposed in this election, Republican State Senator Jason Barrickman of Bloomington. Months after the Department of Corrections closed a couple of buildings at the state prison in Pontiac and transferred a lot of prisoners elsewhere, Barrickman says he's still getting no answers from the agency. In this conversation with WGLT's Charlie Schlenker, Barrickman says the latest fruitless attempt was when the corrections director recently appeared before the Legislative Audit Commission.
We had a really unfortunate exchange. I've been asking questions for some time now about what happened and why people locally weren't given a heads up to the significant inmates that were transferred, whether the rules were followed on the transfers, and whether the department, the director, would give us some direction as to the future of that facility. I've never gotten any answers, and at the Audit Commission hearing recently, I was came out of it very disappointed. The director seemed very defensive. He accused me and my line of questions as being politically driven. He called me a Republican several times as if that was meaningful to something. And the result of our unproductive exchange was several members of the Audit Commission reminded the director that we're all lawmakers. We represent in the Senate 200 and some thousand people. And we, of course, have a responsibility to our constituents. Even the Democratic chair of the commission pushed back on the director and reminding him that as representatives, we're going to have questions and that they should, the department should come forward and be transparent and answer those. So it was a very unproductive and unfortunate outcome.
Have there been any more transfers or indications that the Department of Corrections is going to phase out Pontiac?
I don't know. I wouldn't characterize what's occurred as leading to a phase out necessarily. But there's certainly certain wings of the facility have been closed. It appears to be permanently. The inmate population has diminished significantly as a result of the transfers. And it certainly seems today as though the facility is in a permanent state that is quite different than it was just a few months ago. I'd like to know the administration's plan for it. I got very non-responsive answers. He talked about the fact that there's a staffing issue in corrections, which has long existed. Quite honestly, there's a staffing issue in the employment community at large. It's not just government these days. So he wants to do some job fairs, which I would welcome. But the real question that the people of Central Illinois want to know is, under this administration, what is the plan for the Pontiac Correctional Center? And I think that deserves an answer.
Well, since you didn't get it at the Audit Commission, how can you get that answer?
Well, I think we're going to keep pushing. I've been talking with my Democratic colleagues who, again, share in some of these perspectives. And there's a sensitivity there. There's an election around the corner, we all know. But I think what will likely happen is we'll get through the election. Maybe then we'll see some advancement on a joint hearing where we can put some bipartisan transparency on this. The Audit Commission is an avenue. It's not one that I've pushed for with significance, but there is the possibility of doing an audit of the historical events. It won't answer the future questions, but it'll at least answer my questions about what happened and whether the procedures were followed. So I'm going to keep pushing on this, and I hope, you know, that we're able to get some answers.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker talking with State Senator Jason Berrickman. The governor of Texas has shipped, by last count, more than 1,000 migrants to Chicago from Texas, where they'd been in holding, which leads to the question, what should Illinois as a state do to process or to deal with this influx?
I've long said immigration is an issue at the federal level that deserves a solution, and we're clearly not there at the federal level. The reality of serving in any level of government is you have to deal with the issues that are in front of you today. The fact that 1,000 people, immigrants, show up in our state means that we need to do something about it. I think there's a human element that exists. I think it's unfortunate that, you know, there's been some bickering between the states, but you also see some bickering between the governor and municipal leaders, right, about giving people notice about these immigrants who are being asked to, are being shuttled from one community to the next. I think we all ought to step back and take a deep breath and say, look, these are human beings who've literally shown up at our doorstep, and we need to do our best to do something about that and provide them some type of services and accommodations. And again, step back from the very heightened political rhetoric and look to what we might be able to do to help these people who are literally going through a life-changing event. We do have services around the state that are designed to help people who are going through these types of circumstances where they've got immigration issues, they've got financial issues, they've got housing issues, some basic needs there that I think now that they're here, the state has a role in helping to fulfill.
What's the avenue to do that? Is it the Illinois Emergency Management Agency? Is it other service providers within state agencies? What?
Well, I think you have to look to, sure, the state has a role here, but we really need to partner with our local communities. I think local communities do the best at delivering the services. The basic needs include housing and food. And the best ability for us to deliver housing services and food services, I think, comes at a local level. It's supported by the state. We have state grants and, you know, the DHS and DCFS, like if we're dealing with kids, there's state agencies and support systems there. But ultimately, there's state dollars that help create programs at a local level, which I think do the best at serving people in need.
Do you think that at this point the agencies should handle it, or is there a role for state lawmakers to say, hey, we should be doing X in this context?
Well, there might be a role for us. I don't know the answer to that yet. We've always had immigrants come here. And so I don't know that there's a new program necessarily that needs to be created. It's looking at what exists. I think it's a combination of state and local, but we definitely need that local willingness to step up and to help.
It is, by various definitions, a political stunt, a political act, a pointed rejoinder that this is a problem that needs solution. There are various purposes that this technique from Governor Abbott of Texas can have. How do you think the effect will play out on the Illinois election. Is this a good look for Republicans?
I don't know. I believe that there's a human element here. And while I think a message has been sent around the country that there's an immigration problem, maybe it's a heightened recognition of it, but that's not new. The human element is, you know, suggestions that these people are part of a political chess game is, I don't think, appropriate. These are human beings. I focus on them. They are going through probably one of the most traumatic experiences in their life. And rather than, you know, thinking about how we ought to position this politically, I think the real issue is how do we best, as a state, problem solve on the fact that we have 1,000 new people here who face very significant challenges. I'm not sure that that's the Republican line of the day, but it is one that it's one that I believe in, and I think it's one that is, you know, as you look around Illinois Republicans, I think we ought to recognize that these people are here, and our job is to help solve problems, including for them.
In taking that human-centered focus, are you saying that Governor Abbott should not have used this tool?
Well, I don't think that shipping people from one state to another, it certainly comes off as being not in tune to the human element of the situation.
That's State Senator Jason Berrickman of Bloomington Normal. He spoke with WGLT's Charlie Schlenker.
Joe Esparza's son got COVID. Then a few months later, his other son got it. Then his wife did too.
Step and repeat, you know, it all happened again.
But Esparza himself, he never got COVID despite multiple exposures.
I have no idea, you know. I guess I just got lucky.
Why some people may be COVID super dodgers on the next morning edition from NPR News.
And there's Bloomington Normal News. Listen between 4 and 9 a.m. tomorrow on WGLT.
This is Sound Ideas, WGLT's news magazine. I'm John Norton. Chestnut Health Systems has announced plans to bring a dental clinic to West Bloomington. The center will provide dental care to people on Medicaid and those without insurance. Chestnut received $430,000 from the federal government to help pay for the site. It will be next door to Chestnut's Family Health Center. Chestnut CEO Dave Sherrar tells WGLT's Eric Stock, dental care is one of the widest health disparities in McLean County.
We're barely touching the surface of the need. There are some existing resources that do, you know, provide some dental clinics, but the demand is really, really high. And many, many patients without access end up leaving town, trying to go to free clinics on long waiting lists, hoping to get in. Many of them have to have cash up front or borrow money to get care. So it's really just an untenable situation.
And from what we've seen, the data show that there's a pretty significant disparity among minorities in particular.
There is, yeah. And there's over 40,000 Medicaid recipients in McLean County. Estimates are over 50% of them have never seen a dentist, and the other 50% have some little or no access to dental. So this is really a pressing need.
Why are dentists so disinclined to take Medicaid patients?
Well, there are a lot of dentists with goodwill, but the rate for Medicaid on dental is so low, it doesn't even come close to meeting their costs. So it's really charity care. And there are many great dentists in town who do free clinic days. But when you think about it, with 40,000 and 50% of those with little or no access to dental, you can't have a day a month of a free clinic and even begin to scratch the surface of what's going on here. So that's why this is such an important, you know, thing we're doing.
How does that impact the care that they get then if they're not able to get that care, or perhaps they have to put things off or go for shorter term fixes?
Well, many with unaddressed dental needs will eventually end up in the ED, and the data that we've looked at suggests in McLean County, between the two hospitals, there are around 1,500 ED visits per year for dental emergencies, They have a diagnosis of unspecified disorder of the mouth and gums, but what really can the ED do with dental other than prescribe an antibiotic or a pain med and then try to link that patient, you know, with a dental resource? So that's not really treatment, you know. It's just addressing the pain. And so that, you know, that alone, giving access to good preventive care, what it means for some of those patients is they end up having extractions they may have not needed to have.
How many of the patients here will be Medicaid? Will they be all Medicaid?
You know, there are also around 7,000 or 8,000 uninsured, you know, patients in McLean County. So they won't all be Medicaid. But yeah, the vast majority will be.
How does Chestnut make that financially viable?
Well, the federally qualified health center, you know, receives an enhanced rate for doing this, and we receive grant support from the Health Resources Service Administration to be able to offer these services. We're the FQHC in McLean County, but there are 40 or 50 FQHCs around the state of Illinois. Some have dental, some don't. But the need was so great here that, you know, we pursued this as a really important part of our mission.
And how does this integrate with the primary care, behavioral health, et cetera?
That's what's really exciting is most dental care is segregated. It's not integrated, you know, with a larger system. And so here we have one team working with the patient, a primary care advanced practice nurse or physician, behavioral health clinician, a pharmacist, a case manager, dental hygienist, dentist, all on the same team, you know, coordinating care, talking to each other, same electronic medical records. So really, in this setting, the outcomes will be good.
What all physically needs to be done to get this site ready?
Well, we need to do some renovations. As everybody knows, bids and contractors these days are uncertain, and it takes longer than it used to, you know, before COVID. So we are at a place where we've accepted bids, where we've lined out some purchasing agreements for dental equipment, and we've begun, you know, to post open positions. So we're hoping for a soft opening in 23.
That was Chestnut Health System CEO Dave Sharar with WGLT's Eric Stock. Sharar says the dental clinic will cost $1.3 million. It will also include state and private funds. The federal money comes from community project funding. Central Illinois Congressman Rodney Davis requested the money last year. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT with stories and conversations around Bloomington Normal and McLean County. When someone is battling substance abuse or a mental health problem, who better to help than someone who has been through it themselves, right? Well, that's the thought behind an emerging field in mental health and one that Heartland Community College has joined to help find and train more mental health professionals. In this edition of Sound Health, WGLT's Eric Stock looks at Heartland's new peer support recovery program.
Cecilia Johnson of Bloomington says she's been in substance abuse recovery for years.
I've also struggled in my recovery. I also have mental disorders.
Johnson signed up for Heartland's peer support recovery certification. She's completed a semester of classwork. Now she's doing an internship at a mental health treatment center in Bloomington. Johnson helps others who are going through some of the same challenges she has faced. Some of the work covers the basics, scheduling meetings for clients, providing information about recovery or the legal system, but it also includes being a mentor and cheerleader for them. Johnson says she's glad to advocate for her clients because she understands how hard it is to speak up when you are the one who needs help.
People like myself can come in and help in those centers or in these communities, and they don't have to feel so alone.
Johnson says if you don't speak up for yourself, no one else will. That may be changing. Kelly Pyle is Interim Dean of Health Sciences at Heartland Community College. Pyle says mental health and substance abuse recovery have undergone a revolution over the last decade. Peer support is one part of that.
We've come to realize that there is real value in having somebody who has walked in those same shoes and circumstances as the person who is seeking recovery.
Pyle says those support specialists can also share advice on treatment options with other mental health professionals.
From my own experiences, I know that this is what was really helpful for me, or I've identified some resources that I think might be helpful that as a team you haven't considered because I know what worked in my own experiences.
Pyle says peer support is part of a move away from the idea mental health treatment is linear.
She says the healthcare community understands there are several paths to better health, and what works for one person might not work for someone else. Heartland started the certification program last fall with help from a $710,000 state grant. The program is the first of its kind at an Illinois community college. Seven students signed up in the first year. Two students are doing their internships this fall. The McLean County Center for Human Services in Bloomington works with Heartland to connect the students to internships through its learning lab, where it also runs supervised practices with the people the center serves. Students get a minimum 300 hours of clinical experience. After the internship, students have to pass a state exam to get certified. Then they're ready for entry-level work in behavioral health. Sonia Workman runs the internship program at the Center for Human Services. She also teaches classes on peer support. Workman says there's growing demand for peer recovery support specialists for mental health and substance abuse.
There's a need in emergency departments. There's needs in behavioral health centers. There's needs in hospitals. We could see the need in a school system.
Workman says the Center for Human Services has four peer support recovery specialists on staff. Intern Cecilia Johnson hopes that might be her one day. She wants to help others who have gone through the same substance abuse or mental health struggles. Johnson says the peer support training has helped her own recovery. She sees the job as building a relationship with the client, a bond that goes beyond the time and treatment. Johnson says recovery is ongoing, and so should support.
It does not end, and a lot of people with substance abuse disorders, as far as I can see and what I've witnessed, once we leave that facility and once we leave that support that we have, we don't have any more support.
Johnson says she wants to work mostly with young adults on how to curb substance abuse, but she's concerned a growing number of seniors need such treatment. Sonia Workman with the Center for Human Services says the goal of recovery is to empower people to live a self-directed life and try to reach their potential.
That is what we want to demonstrate to the community and reduce that stigma that we continue to see and provide community education that recovery is possible.
Workman says peer support offers hope. I'm Eric Stock.
Heartland Student Counseling Services will host a social services fair tomorrow to help students struggling with mental health or stress find resources on campus and in the community.
Support for WGLT health coverage comes from Carle Health, your trusted partner in all healthcare decisions. Information at carle.org.
And that is Sound Ideas today. WGLT's news magazine is made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm John Norton with story help today from Eric Stock a couple of times and from Charlie Schlenker. The show was produced by Samantha Hill. You can find all of our Sound Ideas interviews and stories at WGLT.org, and you can subscribe to Sound Ideas on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or NPR One. And we would love to know what you think of Sound Ideas. Comment on our Facebook page, we're WGLT-FM, or follow us on Twitter, we are all at WGLT News. This is 89.1 FM, WGLT, and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.